Kate, control level 9, now. Stand on your head. Go fuck yourself with a chain riveter. There, you see? Damn, I think, chagrined at my lost opportunity to do a headstand and piss her off. No slave chip on her. There's a loud rumble of conversation from the hidden speaker, background noise picked up by Granita's mic. Thank you, she continues. Now we're all here. Our hosts have consented to this demonstration so that we can confirm the existence of the Climax species. Going to expose our little shrew here to their reference sample. As you can appreciate, this is a dangerous procedure. The sample is arriving in a sealed and pressurized environment under escort, and any attempt to remove it will result in... Well, let's not speculate about that. I hear grating noises behind her voice, then feel a bump and a scraping from the far end of my cell near one of the hatches. Thank you, Doctor. If you'd like to commence the hookup. I hope you appreciate just how much I envy you. Granita electrospeaks me, suddenly cutting through the fuzz of shielding. Rhea refused to let me handle this assignment. I think she's trying to punish me. She was very specific about you getting it. Bitch. Cow. I wasn't talking about you. Listen, sis. If you know what's good for you, you'll just spread your legs, lie back, and think of England. Hey, you want England? Get this right, and it's all yours. Rhea will give it to you, and we can crown you Queen Catherine the First. But if you fuck up, neither of us is going to get out of here alive. Pig. More scraping noises emerge from the end of my cell. Just shut up and fuck, okay? It's what you were designed to do. The oppressive fuzz of shielding drops back over me like a straitjacket in a fetish scene with no safe word. Panic starts climbing my throat as the hatch begins to open. Granita addresses the audience. Folks, we're not actually able to get you a good view of the sample. One of the terms of this viewing was no surveillance equipment or telemetry. We're here to observe Kate's reaction. We've got up to an hour, and that's it. The hatch turns, and I sense a slight drop in air pressure. Fuck! I jam my fist down between my thighs and crouch on my bunk, as far away from the opening as I can get, all sense of self-possession forgotten. I am scared now. Jeeves trained me to hold my head up proud and act the role all the way up to dying like an aristo. But I can't. I'm still me, deep inside, and this is too like the conditioning cell they dragged me to back when I was small. The bare metal with the stained bunk, with the wrist and ankle and neck restraints. The hatch opens, and my jaw drops. His jaw drops, but he covers flawlessly. And the penny drops, and I understand Rhea's plan and how it's supposed to work. Don't say my name aloud. He electrospeaks me. No, Pete. I swallow. To the observers behind the one-way glass, he probably looks perfect. I look perfect, too. Stunned. Enslaved. I stand up slowly, facing the door, my pumps accelerating, feeling sweat beading my skin and a warm glow in my crotch. He looks delicious. And he looks happy enough to see me. The Juliet in my head needles me. Well, you're Catherine Sorico, aren't you? Of course he loves you. Where's the real, human? I ask him. In here. Out cold. The mission's blown. The extraction failed. He grins nervously, and it's like the sky opening. "Please," he says haltingly, verbalizing. "Come here." I slide toward him more than willingly, even though I feel a momentary pang for Reginald. "I obey." It doesn't take much acting to sound as if I'm at his mercy.
"What do you mean?"
I'm at the hatch now. Petruchio reaches out and touches me, and I shiver. He's sweating, and not from the heat.
"It was supposed to be a swap. I get in here and sedate the human. You and I fuck for the audience. Once they give up watching, we move the human in here, and I go back in the pod, so the Doc Sleepless's little helpers take away just one male human body. Nobody notices anything was wrong until Rhea was halfway to Saturn."
"Rhea slave-chipped you?" "They've put him in some kind of hospital gown, and he's making a visible tent in it.
You and I fuck for the audience."
I lean forward, wrap my arms around him, tuck my chin on his shoulder, and run one hand up the back of his neck, but he shoves it away reflexively.
"Right. You bitch, Rhea."
Then I glance sideways and freeze.
"What's that?"
"I've never actually fucked a real human in person, you understand. Only via the proxy of Rhea's memories, but I'm not ignorant. They come in a variety of shapes and sizes, but they don't have prehensile tails and fur."
"They stiffed us," Pete tells me. He's disarmingly earnest. "Rhea put all that work into bribing X to get me in here, and you into place to be the method-acting bride of Frankenstein, and what do you know? They sent us a ring-tailed lemur instead. They probably figured it was too risky to expose the real product, but if they can show the bidders one primate, that'll convince them that they can supply the real thing, while not exposing their intellectual property to thieves. I've taken tissue samples and loaded them into my injector, but they're not going to do the job for Rhea. We are so screwed." "Shit."
I glance sideways at the prostrate lemur, who's lying on his back with his legs in the air, snoring. His purple man-tool is stiffly erect, but I'm disappointed to see that he lacks the adapter for Human 1-0. I lean against Pete, thinking furiously, my pulse running wild. "What do you know? Granita's injunction, 'You do not love him,' seems to be holding my echo of her imprinting at bay. But just because I don't love him doesn't mean I don't want him.
We need to do something so we get out of here alive. Quick, who would you rather have angry at you? A consortium of mad scientists who think we're trying to rob them? Or my crazy matriarch's consortium of dupes?"
He licks my earlobe and I shudder.
"I'll take my chances with the Sleepless Cartel. Rhea's got claws."
"Okay. Then I think you should pick me up, carry me over to the bunk, under the one-way window, and fuck me senseless." He's got his arms around me already.
"But won't that tip Sleepless off?"
"Yes.
But this mission is already blown."
Rhea bribed X to get Pete into the transporter along with the sample human, a straight switch that wouldn't be spotted until after the human was in her hands. But she wasn't expecting a lemur. X and his colleagues are probably chortling up their carapaces right now behind her fuming, stiff-necked back.
"I've got a backup plan," I warn Pete.
"For now, just carry me in front of the window and inject me." I hope Reginald doesn't get jealous, but I have a feeling he can't be the jealous type, not if he and his sibs have been employing me and my sibs for so long. His arms tighten around me. Delightful chills race across my skin, and I shudder with the backwash from Juliet's lust. No wonder Granita's pissed off, I think dizzily, as he kisses me, picks me up, and carries me back into the conditioning cell. Then he starts on my clothes, and I lose it. Look, do you really want a detailed description of two sex robots going at it like a pair of bonobos on day release from celibacy camp in front of an audience of jaded aristocrats? What was that? You'll have to speak up. I can't quite hear you. You'll have to try not to breathe so hard. What are you? Some kind of voyeur? Fuck off. I'm on my back, making monkey noises and trying to remember to shield Pete's head whenever we bounce too close to the ceiling. Iris's tenth of a G makes for exciting sex. It's almost at the point where bungee cords and restraints stop being optional extras. When an icy voice cuts through my head. You're enjoying that entirely too much, bitch. Just ask and I'll give him another one for you, too, sis. Forget it. After this, he's all mine. You get England as a consolation prize. Listen, have you got the human ready? Nope. They stiffed us. Sent a monkey instead. Sleepless Cartel was trying to sting us. Pete's taken a tissue sample and transferred it to me for safekeeping, and we're making out to keep the audience happy. Everything's on track, but Sleepless has got to know what we're trying for by now. Shit! Electraspeak doesn't carry intonation easily, but I can feel the note of panic welling up in her mind as if it's my own. Why did you bring that Jeeves along? I ask, trying to keep my mind off the job. Him? It's another of Rhea's plans. We're going to replace the resident Jeeves with our own minion to cover the way out. Why? Well, that plan expired earlier today, didn't it? The wheels are coming off all Rhea's plans, front and rear both. Just thinking. We need to extract Petruchio in place of the human. The monkey's going back to the Sleepless Cartel's lab, and if Pete goes with it, that's everything blown. Can you get the audience's eyes off the window for long enough for Pete to hide under the bed? In about, say, 15 minutes? Pete shudders, and I feel him pulsing inside me. Something very inhuman indeed shoots up into my pink goo sample carrier, which promptly goes into spasm. We may not have a creator, but we've definitely got a sample of monkey blood. A moment later, I start to scream and shudder, too. It's not the monkey blood, just the biggest finger-tingling orgasm I've had in decades. We drift to the floor in an exhausted heap. Time passes. I hear faint music drifting through the speaker in the ceiling. Then a voice. Friends, now that you've seen it in action, totally and utterly dominating and subjugating a proud, self-possessed, honorable lady, it's time to refocus on the value proposition. If you'd just like to look over here, I've got a breakdown on what we propose to do with... Juliet can be a real trooper when she's not plotting to kill you. If she weren't my sister and rival, I could get to like her. She's just watched her kid sister fuck a guy she's head over heels in love over, without stripping a gear, and she's actually told the audience to look away and pay no attention to the animatronic rabbit sticking its pizzle out of the hat. If I didn't know she hated me, I'd give her a big hug. Instead, I hastily climb off Pete, get him to lie down under the metal shelf that supports the mattress, then lie down on it myself, artfully positioning the pad so that it overhangs the ledge, partially concealing him. The hatch between the cell and the cargo pod closes quietly, cutting off the lemur's quiet snores. Then there's some more scraping, as the pod is hauled away by the Sleepless Cartel arbiters who carried it in. Now all there is to do is sit and wait for rescue, and hope that the rescuers don't decide to rescue their own asses by nuking the entire city into a smoking hole in the regolith. Bang! I sit bolt upright. It's a deep thud reverberating through the frame of the bunk. What was that? Asks Petruchio. I don't know,
Bang! The lights outside flicker for an instant, then they go out. I hear shouting. Get down! He reaches over the bed and grabs hold of my arm, pulls me on top of him. For a few confused seconds, we roll around on the floor, trying to get under the mattress and the bed frame. There are more thudding bangs and an ominous hissing sound of air venting. Then there's a loud, whining screech as something stings the outside of the cell at high velocity and shatters. I'd like to pretend that I can respond to this sort of situation heroically or bravely, but it's not true. When you're huddling in a corner of a locked cell with a near stranger for company, in the dark, with a pressure leak and shots being fired, and nowhere to run, it's pretty bad. Stress reflexes kick in, making me shiver and lacrimate as I huddle against Pete, who's holding up better. He shelters me in his arms and talks to me. Stay calm, love. Save your energy. Someone will let us out of here when the shooting stops. Fuck saving my energy, I gasp. This wasn't part of the plan. But he doesn't understand that this is all my fault. I told Reginald to call Dax, tell him what was going on. That Rhea was arranging to steal the creator sample from under the noses of her associates. And I spilled the story to Jeeves Co., letting them know that they've still got a security problem despite Juliet's Machiavellian misdirection with Reginald, and that it's all a family feud. Pete's locked on and in love with me, or Catherine Sorico's face, so he thinks, and he believes it's mutual. He doesn't even know I'm not Juliet. I haven't told him. I shiver in the dark, leaning against him, wondering if I'm going to die. Then there's a noise so loud I don't hear it. I feel it in my bones. And the room flips sideways and lands with a jolt, throwing me onto the one-way window, which is now starred and cracked. A faint light comes from the far end, where the hatch was.
Come out with your hands visible!
A harsh voice booms through my electrosense, painfully loud. Help! I shout. I try to stand up, but there's something on top of me. Pete groans, then rolls off my legs. I stand up.
Come out with your hands visible!
I've heard that voice before, growling over the parasite feed on board the Pygmalion. Which means Reginald got through, of course, and identifies these raiders as friendly, if I can survive long enough to identify myself to them. I stumble toward the dim light. I'm coming, I say. Juliet, don't. It's Pete behind me. I keep going. I have to duck to get through the hatch. Then I'm standing up, keeping my hands visible, trying to make sense of what's going on around me. It's dark, but not too dark to tell there's a huge rip in the ceiling, debris on a corner, loud buzzing from spherical drones circling above head height. The light and smoke comes from combustion processes. Something is burning in the corrosively oxygenated atmosphere. Sinister mecha move through the windows, multiple arms twitching.
Stop! Raise your hands!
I stop and stretch.
Stop!
It booms. But I have stopped, I think, confused.
Juliet, don't! They'll...
I begin to turn. Get back! I shout. But Petruchio is still moving. Coming out of the shattered end wall of the capsule cell and looking around.
Danger! Replicator bloom!
All around the wreckage of the hall, spherical drones spin their turrets toward the doorway behind me.
Clear and sterilize!
Wait! I Electra shout. He's not a... Everything lights up, violet white. Epilogue. Outward Bound. I am broken, and I am whole, and I am serializing this, writing it down in words as a letter, because I don't want to inflict the direct experience of my emotions on you, and in any case, where I'm going is too far away to send back a soul chip, and bandwidth is scarce enough to make an imago this complex prohibitively expensive. You need to know what happened as a warning, and a caution. But it would be wrong to make you live through it, sis. One of the most important lessons life has taught me is that you should be careful what you wish for. I asked, and Reginald delivered. I didn't ask for much, just that he passed my information on to Dax, who at that moment was already in Heinleingrad, along with a shipload of soldiers from the Replication Suppression Agency. Granita, Juliet, is officially dead. Stone and three of his sibs and her bodyguard of scissor soldiers went down with her in a brief and bloody firefight that took out one wing of the Heinlein Excelsior. Which makes it all the more peculiar that Juliet is still alive and working for Jeeves Co., with all her sins apparently forgiven. I'm not sure whether she's the same Juliet, however. There certainly appear to be enough copies of her soul chip floating around, after all. And it occurs to me that agents capable of conveniently infiltrating the service of a mad, bad, criminal mastermind like Rhea might well need to surround themselves with convincing cover stories and a cloud of plausible excuses and useful idiots like yours truly. But I'm not going to ask. That would be too humiliating for words. What the RSA troops did to Petruchio is officially an accident. And who knows whether they're lying. They'd gone in to try to suppress an auction of no ordinary pink goo, but a genuine synthetic creator. A weapon of mass dominion. And Pete was good enough to fool Juliet on first acquaintance. To expect any better of their automatic weapon platforms would be foolish. Dax is, of course, very sorry indeed. He'd better be. If he isn't sorry enough to satisfy Juliet, then I can be sure that she'll let him know about it. We're all very sorry, to different extents, of course. The elusive Dr. Sleepless, linchpin of the whole criminal replicator program, is missing. Probably he was never on Eris to begin with. It's even possible that the entire floor show was an elaborate fraud, and that while his cartel has gotten as far as fabricating a lemur, they're nowhere near ready to raise and socialize a human infant. Hopefully, the violent response to this attempted auction has caused them to reconsider the wisdom of raising such dangerous ghosts and releasing them on the inner system. Rhea, my mad cannibal mother, is probably not dead, but is definitely missing. So is the Icarus Express, which is not merely annoying but alarming. There is an old maxim in space warfare that there are no horizons beyond the atmosphere. And it's also true that Icarus's nuclear propulsion system would be visible from Earth orbit if he'd fired it up for Eris's departure. But there's the small matter of some disturbing, unmemory-chipped holes in the Irisian Traffic Control Collective's memory, possibly assisted by an unearthly large sum of reels greasing the correct manipulators. And out here, the Pink Police don't have the clout to shut down and inspect all traffic in and out of orbit. As likely as not, Icarus is taking a slow, downbound cruise inside the freight bay of a bulky hydrogen snowball supercarrier, his wings folded for the nonce. Of course, the Domina has had her assets frozen. Equally certainly, the Domina herself has been slumbering in a shallow grave for many decades, and Rhea has other husks to reanimate once she migrates back to her own stomping grounds. Which should tell you why getting the word out before she arrives is vitally important. Don't let her fool you. Especially if you hear from Emma, her first and least obvious sisterly sock puppet. If you answer her calls, Rhea will shut you back in that cell to repeat your 11th birthday all over again, lonely and abused until you turn into a damaged copy of her own revenge-obsessive self. And as for Reginald, one considered the most draconian measures appropriate in his case, says Jeeves, staring at me coldly from behind his desk. I'm not brave, but sometimes I can be foolhardy. I look him right in the eye. I see you're still employing Juliet, I point out, even though she's got unreliable tendencies. Yes. He allows the silence to drag on uncomfortably. Studying him, I wonder why I ever thought he was remotely friendly and avuncular.
Perhaps it's just sib-to-sib variation, but something about Reginald strikes me as much more humane than this varnished and imperturbable juggernaut, weighing life and death in his hands. But then, what else should you expect of a senior official in Jeeves Corporation's internal security department? Reggie is a junior sib like myself, a resident from a branch office, not fully part of the program. Whereas this fellow is close to their template patriarch, as distant and coolly composed as Rhea at her worst. The Jeeves persona makes a beautiful and urbane cover, until it's time for the truncheons to come out, unless the man behind the mask cracks. Your model are notoriously erratic, but truly superb when their minds are on the task at hand. Why can't you let him go? I try. To my surprise, he sighs. My dear, what would happen to the rest of us? It would set a precedent. We're not slave-chipped arbiters. We do this from a sense of duty. Somebody has to mop up after these depraved aristos while they fumble their way toward a more equitable settlement. And it's a short step from personal servant to civil servant. But the job has pressures attached, as you should know. If one lets him go, it'll give the other juniors ideas, won't it? The demotivated and the inexperienced will think it's a shortcut to the easy life of a self-owned free Martin. I snort. I can't help myself. What easy life? Pulling rickshaws and taking shit from aristos in the Cloud Casino on Venus? Cranking away at an antique instrument in the steamy swamps of Antarctica? The lube in the untapped container always runs smoother. He pats the business desktop in front of him. No, I don't think. But he was systematically hung out to dry. Then he was slave-chipped. I hear my voice rising. He had his arms and legs cut off in the line of duty. His only lapse was to fall for one of my kind. Is that so bad? As a matter of fact, it's unpardonable. He looks deeply unamused. What if it had been Rhea? I can't just let you kill him. My fingertips are digging into the arms of my chair. Two RSA Mecha warriors are standing guard outside the door. I'd never make it, but... One is reassigning young Reginald to active duty, the Jeeves in command says sharply. Then unexpectedly, he smiles. He's going on a long voyage. One can never be too sure that Tau Ceti is clear of dangerous replicators, can one? My jaw drops. One gathers you were sniffing after a berth on the bark. One hopes it turns out to be what you really wanted. And so, we come full circle to the present. I'm lying in a cocoon on a bunk with restraint straps top and bottom in a cold metal box of a room. There's not much in the way of furniture, and it's very chilly, and the lights are dim and weirdly blue. The walls hum with suppressed power. There's little sense of gravity in here. The ends of the restraint straps flap whenever I move. But we're under acceleration. A thousandth of a G doesn't sound like much. But when you keep it up for years or even decades, it adds up. Across the short gangway, there's another bunk. I glance over and make eye contact with its occupant. Are you happy? I ask. Reggie smiles, embarrassed perhaps. I think he knows I'm still writing. Always. Got any messages for my readers? Oh, Freya. He rolls his eyes, but he's still smiling. Go on. Happy birthday, he crows. Then he reaches up and pulls his mask down, ready to go into deep slow time. Shithead, I shouted him. But I'm smiling all the same. He doesn't reply, so I seal my own cocoon and settle down. Once I send this warning, there's nothing more to do until we're up to cruising speed, and it's time for me to start learning useful skills to fill the long years. I've got lots of birthdays to look forward to, and none of them need fear being eaten by memories of Rhea.
The End. You've been listening to Saturn's Children, a space opera by Charles Strauss, narrated by Bianca Amato. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.